from the hill country in Texas, broadcasting
thing,
worldwide, yeah. This is OneRadioNetwork.com.
Bit poop lampshade poop. Yeah. What are we going to do?
Good morning.
Good morning.
This is OneRadioNetwork.com. The telephone number is 888-663-6386. Email patrick@oneradionetwork.com. Here's your host, Patrick Timpone.
And that would be me, and you're you, and Andrew Goss is our special guest every Wednesday, the star of the show. I am your congenial host, and I just try to help explore what's behind door number one, door number two, and door number three. Could that be it? So we could have, let's see, dollar, gold, and Bitcoin behind three doors, Andrew. What do you think? Andrew Goss is a currency historian. He's a nationally recognized expert on the United States monetary system. He's a good friend, known about 25 years or so, and he's not steered me wrong very well. He did recommend a couple movies that I walked out of, but other than that, I think he's been pretty good with his advice. And you can join the show. 888-663-6386. Email Patrick at OneRadioNetwork.com. Andrew is also a big-time filmmaker, big-time filmmaker, kind of like Martin Scorsese, right?
No.
He's the Martin Scorsese of New Jersey.
And maybe of Hawthorne.
And of Hawthorne.
Maybe. Maybe somebody better and bigger.
And Andrew's big film called The Four Presidents
going to be premiering. Yes.
This weekend at the Hoboken Film Festival.
I'm psyched. Bought a new shirt.
Oh, you bought a new shirt?
Oh my goodness.
So if you guys up in that area would like to go, where would they go?
They would go to the Hoboken International Film Festival.
International now.
In lovely Greenwood Lake, New York. Mm-hmm. Or you go to the HIFF website.
HIFF, all right.
And get their schedule.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Uh-huh.
We'll be making it available on DVD in probably a month.
Oh, really? So you're going to show your film up there, The Four Presidents?
Yeah, I agreed to debut it, premiere, whatever you call it. First showing, first public showing at the film festival.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Do you have to have like a girlfriend with a short skirt and a big car to get in that thing?
No, we're not that kind of film festival. On Friday night, we're giving a Lifetime Achievement Award to Lou Gossett Jr.
Oh, he's cool.
He is cool. He's done so many good movies, and he's been ignored lately. So every year we pick one of these forgotten actors and give him a Lifetime Achievement Award. This year it is Lou Gossett. So we show a little reel of all the films he's been in. And then he comes up, and we hand him a trophy, and that's the evening. So,
you know, one of my favorite roles, Lou Gossett, was the drill instructor for
an officer and a gentleman.
Mayonnaise. What a classic movie. Yeah, he was great. Wasn't he?
Yeah, he was great in that role. Yeah. And, you know, you get to see what's missing in most young men's lives, right? The classic father figure.
Yeah.
And That's what Lou was perfect at. I imagine he's still making an impact on people's lives. So, yeah, I think he deserves a Lifetime Achievement Award, and I'm going to be proud to be there to give it to him.
Mm-hmm. Well, we have a lot to talk about here this morning. I have so many tabs open. My little computer is saying, help. And what we try to do is look at the big picture of money and this thing called money, mm-hmm. and how it's all intertwined with politics, right? Geopolitics,
right.
Gold,
yeah.
And stocks, bonds, pension funds, people's retirement, how much money they're, how much stuff their dollars will buy.
Yes.
Right, 15 years from now,
mm-hmm.
when they're in their little cabin drinking a martini with a little umbrella in it.
Correct.
And they say, you know, I think we're going to run out of money here, Marge. What went wrong with this picture, right?
Not enough money at the end of the month.
And if we understand that it's all about this thing you've taught us, the dollar, right? That's what
Correct.
It's all about.
Yes, it is.
And if you understand that, who's controlling that and how it's all intertwined, then you might have an idea of what a martini will cost and, you know, That's correct. 2028, right?
Yeah.
Right?
And you can't really take a short view, which, of course, I'm getting my phone calls yesterday and Friday. Hey, how come the dollar is so strong? You said.
Well, yeah. I know. I was going to give you a hard time about that.
Well, give me a hard time. Go ahead.
The dollar is 93 point something on the U.S. dollar index, and you've been telling us the dollar is just gonna not crash and burn, but really take a big hit. So, I mean,
barring a pickup in productivity, a continuing dollar rally is unlikely. Okay, you got twin deficits, right? Budget deficit, trade deficit, that are crowding out private investment by raising borrowing costs. So, where is that 10-year today?
3%, right?
Like 3 and easy 3. You know, over 3, and people are getting used to it over 3. So the harsh reality is the fundamentals have not changed a single bit. Global liquidity is tightening. I mean, look at the Italian situation. The euro slides below 118, which, you know, people didn't expect that. So that is causing a flight to quality. Which, believe it or not, we're back to the, yeah,
that's crazy.
The cleanest, dirty shirt in the laundry.
Are we in big trouble as a world if the dollar is quality?
Yeah, yeah, we were.
You know what I'm saying?
But the trend towards additional issues, shall we say? I mean, look at the euro fell more than 0.5% in a day because the Italian circumstance they. They're going to ask the European bank, to ECB, to forgive like 250 billion euros of debt.
Oh, Mario's not going to go for that, is he?
Well, that was kind of the view, but
the Mario on the drawing.
Once the Italian government is formed, the market will like to know what are their details, like what are they going to do, and that's the big question. If they push the ECB, if we go back into an Italian crisis, I mean, you can see the problems from there. So we had talked about Italy and Spain. You know, we never fixed those problems back then. We merely put them off. And guess what? The day of reckoning is here. So because all of that, you've got about 5% of the Italian sovereign debt held outside of EU. So for the most part, it's an internal problem. And that means that these guys are going to... You're going to see that flight of capital. So we're watching closely, but I don't think there's any fundamental change in the dollar. And what we're looking at really portends either higher interest rates or a weaker dollar. Take your pick.
Mm-hmm. So what Andrew's talking about, they had a big election, and as it always is in Italy, it's always a mess because they have, what, 40 parties or something like
something
that?
Something like that, yeah. The way it should be.
Yeah, the way it should be. So now they're all kind of getting together, but the platform looks like it's going to be a parallel currency. That'll be fun. Mm-hmm. Reduced immigration. Yeesh. Boy, the whole EU.
Anti-immigration.
Boy, they are just.
Trumpness.
Man,
yeah.
Trumpness all over. And flat taxes is what they're talking about in Italy.
Yeah.
And that, you know, that should be fun. What's this parallel currency? It's going to be, let me see, a study. This is a parallel currency based on future tax receipts, similar to the plans proposed by the people in Greece. The mini-bot was in the elections manifesto, the guys that won. Let's see. A parallel currency stands a much greater chance of success in Italy. It would come a way of solving the government's fiscal demise. Okay, so what is this about? I don't understand. A parallel currency on taxes?
You know, when Adolf Hitler took over.
Oh, Adolf, you're going to talk about.
Yeah, this is definitely Hitler.
This is a Hitler thing.
And he brought in Horace Greeley Hallmar Schacht, who was the central banker, if you will. He said to Hitler, look, you've taken all of this.
Look, he called him A.
Look, A.
Hey, look.
He's Canadian.
Put down that beer. Put down that beer. I got to talk to you.
You're taking all of the nation's currency
and
you're paying it out in reparations. And meanwhile, you want to rebuild your internal systems. Why don't we have a second type of currency that's only good in Germany.
Oh,
so
did
he had the Rentenmark and the Reichsmark, and we use one currency, in that case, the international currency for them is the euro. So we'll take all of our euro and we'll pay our external debt,
yeah,
and then we'll create an internal currency. What do we call it?
I don't know.
What do we call it?
Lira or whatever.
The pasta.
The pasta. We'll call it the pasta.
And we're going to take, and that currency is going to be good only internally.
Oh.
So it's not going to be used outside.
That's kind of a mess, isn't it?
It is kind of a mess.
It's kind of messy.
But it's been done before. And
how'd it work out for A?
Well, hey, how'd it work? Well, his economy boomed. You know, we got the Autobahn, the Volkswagen, everybody went back to work. They were all happy. This is why they went along with his more radical proposals. Because, hey, look, he put us all back to work. He took us out of a depression. He put us on the path to prosperity. And look at some of those rallies and stuff. I mean, he was like a hero to the German people. This was, of course, way before the atrocities committed.
Sure.
But it cemented his support and I think emboldened him to the point that he felt he could kill somebody on Fifth Avenue and wait a minute. No, that was this guy.
Yeah.
So you see what I mean?
Yeah,
he felt like the people were behind him. And so let's go marching into the Sudetenland there.
Yeah,
so
take all the stuff.
And take, yeah. And so this really was as a result of the parallel currency put into Germany on the eve of World War II. So this is before he started marching his armies in. But all of the production for his war machine and all of the production for the internal improvements were all financed by this parallel currency because all of the production prior to that in Germany was going just to pay war reparations.
There wasn't
prior incursion.
You mean before
World War One?
They were still paying bill for that.
That's right.
Like they lost the war and they said, you owe us this.
Yeah.
Kind of thing. Yeah.
That's kind of the way it was always
wars
done.
Work,
the
right?
Loser paid the bills.
The loser pays. Kind of like in Vegas, right?
Yeah.
Sir, could I have, that's going to be $400 for your room? What?
Yeah.
The
British legal system. In Great Britain, if you file a suit against somebody and you lose,
really?
You have to pay their legal fees.
Really?
You don't just pay your own, so you pay theirs as well.
So, IRS sues you, you can, they're going to pay.
You sue them and you win, they pay your legal fees.
Really?
So, yeah, that's the way the British legal system works. And
not here, though. We don't do that.
Not here, no.
We don't do that here.
No.
We don't do that here. If you'd like to be on the show, 888-663-6386, email patrick@oneradionetwork.com.
Although many have proposed it, Patrick.
Oh, I know.
You think of all the frivolous lawsuits that would never be filed if you knew that if you lose, you got to pay the other guy's legal fees. Man, you better be sure you have a case.
I once had a girlfriend, Francine Frivolous, right? And, she broke her NDA. It cost me a lot of money,
Sure could.
It cost you a lot. Cost you a lot of money, to keep her quiet. But oh my God! It's like, come on.
Yeah, when they're bought, they're supposed to stay bought.
Stay bought. That's right.
To buy them
you
again.
You need a new fixer. That's what you need.
Swear.
A new fixer. So this idea of a parallel currency has actually been, if you go to the dark web here in this country, the really out there web, they've said this is in the works forever, right here.
Yeah.
There's going to be a new dollar.
Yeah.
And this new dollar is going to be used to, around the world. And we're going to have this new gold-backed dollar here in the United States. So I'm waiting for that.
Yeah, me too. I would. But in the meantime, I'm just collecting my own gold-backed dollars.
I know.
The actual gold dollars.
Yeah, the actual gold. So Italy could pull something like this off with this parallel currency thing?
Oh, sure.
So
I mean, it's
they're going to base it on taxes, right?
It's been done before.
Yeah.
It's not a.
But what about the wheelbarrow full of money that we see in Germany? What happened there?
Well, what happened there was we had a single
currency.
That
was a problem.
And there was not enough of it, and so they simply printed more. That's the inflation story.
The Deutschmark, right?
Deutschmark, yeah.
Right.
Well, in this case, what was that? Yeah, it was the Deutschmark.
The classic picture of the wheelbarrow.
Yeah, 1922, 23.
Give me a loaf of bread.
Post-World War One, in order to pay the reparations bill, the Central Bank of Germany printed a bunch of new currency, which devalued all the existing currency. So it was their way of making the German people that had money pay. Their money was just rendered worthless in a very short period of time.
Which is kind of like what we do here.
A lot more slowly, though.
Yeah, a lot more slowly.
Imperceptibly.
Not subversive would be a good word.
Insidious would be a good
Insidious
word.
Insidious is a good word?
Yeah, because we don't know what's going on. Most people, they just look at their bank statements or their brokerage statements and see the total number.
Digits.
Yeah, they see the total number. They don't think of the substance of each number.
Well, I remember when Ronald Reagan was in office, his first year, and he was looking good, right? He had that great hairdo and all that thing. Mm-hmm. And the official debt for the first time went over $1 trillion.
Correct.
So I went and did a little homework this morning, and I Googled what would be the GDP in 1981, and I got $3.2 trillion. Right?
Yeah.
So that was pretty interesting. So it took 200 years from 1781 to 1981 to get up to $1 trillion in debt. That was pretty good, right? 200 years, only a trillion?
Yep.
We did pretty good as a country.
Yeah.
I don't know what happened after that. I think Ronald Reagan had too many jelly beans. But then
deficits don't matter.
And then
Dick
it
Cheney.
Went down from the... Now if you go to now, it's pretty interesting where we have, what, 21 trillion?
Nearly 22.
And some change. And then our GDP, I looked up this morning, is first quarter for 2018 is about, well, right at 5. So let's just call it 20 to be easy, right? So our GDP is 20.
Right.
So that's about equal to our debt, right?
Correct.
Is that good?
Yeah. Is it good?
Is that good? I mean, are we doing good?
Well, that's good math, yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, are we going...
We're not doing good.
Yeah,
so if
because
you look
in 1980, we were only a third.
That's correct.
We were only a third of our GDP,
yeah.
And now we're equal, or 105%.
105%.
So what does that say about
as though
us?
Well, what it says is that GDP did not really increase during that period of time. So you could look at it in a vacuum and say, oh, GDP's gone from $1 trillion to $20 trillion since 1981.
Yes,
isn't that
has.
Great?
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Yeah, money supply has gone from $3 trillion to $33
trillion. That's not good.
So the two numbers have more in common than
debt. You told us years ago that the money supply was only $1 trillion in 1980.
That's right. Yeah,
okay.
It was slightly over.
Yeah, we
hit our first trillion in 1980.
So the money supply and the debt were pretty much equal back then.
Yeah.
Wow. So we have about 21 trillion more debt in 35 years, and not as much growth in the GDP.
We certainly don't have 21 times the GDP growth, do we?
No. But also, all that debt is supposed to be more productive.
Correct.
I mean, why else would you borrow money?
To give it away.
What?
Well, remember the productive inflation versus compassionate inflation.
So if you
do like China, you create a bunch of money, you build a Three Gorges Dam,
productive.
And then it
right.
throws off productive, very productive.
Productive inflation.
And you're President Obama and you borrow $1 trillion and give everyone a phone, not so productive.
I see.
But very compassionate.
Well, I felt better because...
You borrow a bunch of money and give people food stamps. Very compassionate.
Borrow
a bunch of money and give them health care.
But I mean...
Very compassionate.
But that's not worth the $20 trillion. That was just a small part of it. Where's all the other stuff?
A bunch of other things just like that.
Like blowing countries up.
Well, there's that.
That kind of thing. That kind of thing, right? That's where you... Okay.
Yeah. So that's not very productive, is it? Yeah.
Well, it is if you're CEO of Boeing, you do good.
Mm.
Right?
I suppose. Mm. Or,
you know what I mean?
Yes, I do.
So,
defense contractor.
So just because you borrow a lot of money doesn't mean you do smart things with it.
No.
I guess it's a nice way to say it.
And whether you do or not, it's still stimulative. You know, if you borrow a bunch of money and you blow things up, you still have to build the bombs and, you know, put them in a plane and fly them over there and drop them on a house, right? So that is stimulative. The people that built the bombs had jobs and they got paid.
And they bought
but it's not very productive.
They bought a burger there down the street from Boeing and that kind of thing. What was that?
Not very productive, though.
Do you hear that click? What was that?
I did hear that.
I don't know what that was.
Probably the NSA.
But, they always click in. Or right after the show starts.
Yeah.
So.
Or Mueller's investigators. You know, I bought a Russian tie yesterday.
You bought a Russian tie? Whoops. Yeah, that's not good. That's what we heard. Let me redial. Man, that was ugly. Did you hear that? Wow. That was ugly.
Yeah, that was it.
Did you hear that?
I said Russian tie.
Don't say Russian anymore. Yet. Don't.
Whoops. Cut it out.
Jeez. Don't.
All right, we won't talk about Russia.
Don't talk about Russia. It probably won't happen. It's kind of weird. 888-663-6386. Email Patrick at oneradionetwork.com. Well, speaking of the R word, it's Mr. Putin's, he's getting right down to it, right? Mm-hmm. He's not fooling around. So here's what he's talking about. He said, we used to behave naively, but now we see that the WTO, the World Trade Organization, the rules are often broken. And all these restrictions imposed on political reasons, now we just can't, and they call them sanctions, they call them this, they call them that. What this is really is about...
stopping us.
The whole world sees the dollar monopoly is unreliable, it is dangerous for many, not only for Russia, and it just has to end. And this whole idea of selling our oil for dollars and all that stuff, we're just over it. Stop it. We're done. Mm. Oil is traded in dollars on the exchange, Putin said. He just didn't fool around. He went right there, right?
Yes, he did.
He went right there.
Everybody's messing. We're messing with his bridge, though. See, you know, that's...
his bridge?
Dollar. Yeah, he just opened a bridge into Crimea, I think, today, right?
Hey. It's hard to keep up with old Vlad. I don't know what he's up to. So he, and of course the Chinese, they're becoming more vocal and trying to do more things to bypass the dollar.
Yeah, that's right. But they waited a little too long. So, you know, Russia definitely would like to ditch the dollar for oil payment, but since we're starting to export oil, that's going to be rather difficult. Of course, we're going to price our oil in dollars. And, you know, we could very well do the same thing that we were talking about with trade sanctions, Chinese tariffs on U.S. soybeans. So we don't export any of our soybeans to China. We export them all to another country who exports them to China. So it is, it's interesting that this, at this time when the U.S. is becoming a surplus oil producer, that this is the time that we're going to try to ditch the dollar. I don't think he's going to get much success in it. It was just not just dollars; it was euros as well.
So it really is as $1.18 for a euro.
Yeah.
Wow, I remember it was $1.60 at some
That's
point, right?
Right? Yeah, mm-hmm. Yes.
We should go to Italy and buy some pasta or something like that.
Well, that's the thing, you know, when the dollar being as strong as it is. Yeah. You'll see tourism really pick up as the dollar will go a lot farther. And so American tourists will show up in Europe again. Hmm.
So what's gas doing around $4? What's this about? I mean, oil prices are high.
We talked about $70 oil. I think we're there now, aren't we?
Oh, yeah, $70, yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And that's the main driver of inflation. But, you know, back to Putin, he would like to see the oil trade de-dollarized, no question about it. But if the U.S. is going to continue to step up and be a major producer of oil, he's not going to be able to tell us what to price our oil in. It's just impossible.
So, is it? I don't understand. If we are becoming more oil, less oil dependent on the Mideast, right? Which you said we are.
Yeah.
So what's Mr. Trump's handlers? Why is he so hawkish? I mean, what's the motive behind that? Just controlling the world and stuff like that?
Well, he sees the real numbers. He gets the real picture.
Oh, so, you mean he gets reports that we don't see?
Yeah, that we don't see. And you know, he is a cheerleader. So even in the face of his own imminent bankruptcy, he was out with great flourish, not now, but, you know, back in the day. He was out with great flourish telling everyone how great he was doing, when in fact he was not doing so well.
Own his company's private company.
Correct. Right. Yeah. The bravado is necessary to maintain confidence, because if the rest of the world loses confidence and says, oh, well, maybe Putin will succeed in de-dollarizing the oil trade, especially with Iran's help, my goodness, it could get very ugly very fast from there.
Yeah.
So, I don't think we can make up the difference.
Oh, Vlad's got a little budget surplus I was reading. He's doing pretty good. Yeah, he's got a little fat wallet over there, man.
Yeah,
the spike.
Because
of oil prices, right?
Yeah.
That's what it is, really.
But it's still down 5%, the ruble against the dollar. So, you know, I don't know that he's got more of them, but they're worth less. The same problem, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so this is something, though, that a budget surplus, something that Russia hasn't seen in quite a while.
Been a long time.
Yeah.
So, but he doesn't mind getting dollars because he's been buying a lot
buying
of gold.
Gold. Yeah.
So right. he's not a.
So he knows what he's going to do with his surplus.
Yeah, he just buys
he's
gold.
Buying
right?
gold. Yeah. Yes, exactly right. The you know that golden rule.
You got the gold.
Makes the rules, and he's just loading gold in wherever he gets it.
Mm-hmm. Andrew Goss buys and sells gold coins for a living. That's what you do, right? That's no,
yeah,
that's no secret.
I wouldn't sell it to them, though.
That's no secret. What's going on in the world of numismatics right now? Give yourself a little plug for your company.
Oh, wow.
You're SDL. You have a company in Hawthorne, New Jersey, and in Hilton Head. You guys been 30 years or so?
35
years.
36.
And they said you wouldn't.
37.
They said you wouldn't make it, too.
Hey, right.
They said you wouldn't make it.
Yeah.
So when we see... for example, the gold go down, what was it, Monday, $20, something like that, was it?
Yes.
Yeah. So what does that do?
It unleashes
for your
a
business,
buying wave.
For
I
your
mean,
business.
All the people that were standing aside saying, next dip I'm going to buy, they bought. So all the people whose trigger points was 1300. You know, we missed it last time, but as soon as it goes under 1300, we're buying.
We're 1290 today.
Yeah, those folks came out of the woodwork.
And they say, well, you want to buy. But most of the things that you sell are not really dependent on the price, the spot price that much, right?
No, most are not. However, the semi-numismatic coins, the $20 St. Gaudens and things of that nature, have been very active during this period.
So because whenever, they actually go down a little bit.
Yeah, they go down when gold goes down. They go up when gold goes up.
Mm-hmm.
So the semi-numismatic coins, in effect, went down by $20 per ounce. Now, these are the coins that if you buy one, I can offer you a second one instantly. There's no shortage of them at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
There are rather substantial pools. You can buy them in lots of 1, 10, 20, 120. So that's not to compare with the numismatic coins where there are only one, maybe two.
Mm-hmm.
So those types of coins have a slow and steady growth rate that has pretty much continued unabated. And, you know, the more we look, the more we see. So recently, for example, we discovered coins with missing mint marks. So the 2014 Great Smoky Mountain America the Beautiful collector coins.
I want one of those.
They're cool. Yeah. They're missing mint marks. Five of them have been certified now that didn't have the mint mark. And as a result, we create an extreme rarity. Like the 55 Double Die. This was a bunch of pennies that were released into circulation back in 1955 that had very distinct doubling. So these new discoveries, of course, by Numismatic Guarantee Corporation, that's their only function, is to spot the differences, grade and authenticate coins. And a coin with a mint mark that's missing, many people would suspect that it wouldn't be real. But... it is real. It's a very real coin, and it instantly creates a rarity. One that didn't exist before.
No. Oh, And people want them.
Yeah, they want them.
People want them.
I picked up a standing quarter from 1924, probably one of my favorite coins. And I was very pleased to get my hands on it. And while I was busy chasing that, this news came out about the missing mint mark coins. Now, needless to say, I didn't stop and look at my 2014 America the Beautiful coin, because I didn't buy them. I didn't even participate in that market.
Oh.
Yeah, these are modern rarities. I don't chase them. I don't go after them. These coins are just not. I prefer a coin like the 1820 Half Eagle.
It's been my favorite for years.
1820, you know. Now you know all the coins that are in existence are already out there. No new ones are going to show up.
Can folks listening get in on numismatic coins without having a boatload of money?
Well, so let's say you get on an accumulation program and you devote a few hundred or a few thousand dollars a month to this particular endeavor, and you set a goal for yourself. So recently we've been promoting the 144-piece silver commemorative halves that were minted starting in 1892 with the Queen Isabella quarter and the Colombian half dollar for the Columbian Exposition. And they ran right to 1954 with the final Booker T. Washington Carver half dollar. These coins were released into circulation, sold to collectors individually over the last 50, 70 years. And to me, they represent a great buying opportunity because there's only a handful of the coins that are expensive and hard to find. The rest can be bought for just a few hundred dollars. So to just add one or two each month until the goal is completed, well, that's a very doable thing. The other thing with the fall in gold prices, the 4-piece, 8-piece, 12-piece type set where you get, one of each of the different 20s. There's two 20s. There's the $20 Liberty and the $20 St. Gaudens. There's the $10 St. Gaudens and the $10 Liberty. There's the $5 St. Gaudens, if you will. It was actually Bella Lyon Pratt. And $5 Liberty. There's the $2.50 of each type. And then the $3 gold piece and three little gold dollars. So if you buy each of those coins, what you have is a complete type set of all the different types of U.S. gold coins. And it's not that hard to do. And with falling gold prices, it's actually a great buying opportunity. So we've been doing those as well. For the more energetic, we do those as date sets. So like you try to get 4 pieces from 1925. And in the Liberty, you get 4 pieces from 1877. And by picking your year and then making each coin of that same year, you've completed a task now that's very difficult. Now, that's not an easy task. So obviously worth doing.
Cool. Well, you can tell Andrew Goss knows his stuff when it comes to coins. If you like to play around in the numismatic world and learn more about it, he has some free CDs up there he can send you, and he'll give you all the information that you want and hook you up and have some fun. His number there is 800-468-2646. That's 800-468-2646. What's your main website? Is usgoldcoins.com?
Yeah, the commercial site is usgoldcoins.com. If you want to read what I've written over the last 30 years, go to andygause.com. And that one is, won't bore you with coins. I had to separate it from the commercial side because it was clogging everything up. So yeah. You want to read about the Federal Reserve and, money and how money came to be and where it went and where it came from and so forth. That's all at andygause.com. And if you're really interested in coins and that's your only thing, well, usgoldcoins.com, that's the website for that. But word of caution. We don't do any commerce on the web. It is like fraught with peril. There is so much risk that we don't take it on at all.
Fraught with peril. From the motion picture, Fraught with Peril. Andy Goss, Patrick Timpone. It is the real world of money. Come on and join us. 888-663-6386. Email Patrick at oneradionetwork.com. We'll have a lot of fun this morning. We're going to talk about a whole wide variety of things. Previously, with cancer specialist Dr. Francisco Contreras on rebounding.
There's a study that was done in America with women that exercise 4 hours a week strenuously. And those that had 66 less incidence of cancer of the breast than the women that didn't do exercise. That's how impactful exercise can be.
We've been a big fan of rebounding, these little trampolines, for years.
Rebounding is one of the best because not only is it not as aerobic as many other exercises, but it is, but it also moves the lymph from within your body. And remember that lymph is the one that's bringing out all of the toxins. And if you don't get it up to your heart and then out through the urine, the toxins stay there. So rebounding is an excellent, excellent form of exercise that just about anybody can do. I mean, we have some 85-year-old people that rebound. It's very easy, even for elderly people, to get on the rebounder and just go up and down. It's an excellent exercise.
Certainly is. The Rebound Air Lifetime Warranty Rebounder. Click and order right now. 1-RadioNetwork.com. We've been selling more and more of these little guys. I don't know, just a trend or a fad or something. But I think many people are beginning to understand with the more and more interviews we have that it's just really necessary to move the booty. So these are really cool little things to have around and an easy way to lymph system, as we said, and you know, get your pulse rate up and do burst exercises and really have some fun. Two items from Ken Rolla that we think are really, really worth considering is the Golden Pyramid, where you can put one in your bedroom. And if you have any kind of cell phone reception in your home, then you have the towers. You know, this stuff is just not good for us. The more and more we read about it, and we don't know exactly what it all does, but we know it messes up with the cells and stuff like that. So these Golden Pyramids go out about 15 feet, 20 feet. Put one in your bedroom. I would start there. And if you really feel a difference with the way you sleep and just the way you feel when you sleep, then you can maybe get one for your living room, something like that, where you hang out. Different from the Blue Shield, where it actually works on the cells in the body, this is actually massaging those little beams that are coming through, those little love beams coming through from the cell phone towers and the Wi-Fi that you have in your house, which we don't recommend you leave on, but most people do because they don't want to turn it off. And you know the story, put a little Golden Pyramid. So that's on the front page. And then same place, you have the Water Vitalizer Plus, where you can structure your water. And these are really worth doing. Look into those two items. Ken Rolla site, and you can click on any place in our store, and you can see both those items, okay?
Good morning. Good morning. This is OneRadioNetwork.com. The telephone number is 888-663-6386. Email Patrick@OneRadioNetwork.com.
Well. As the lady said, 888-663-6386. Email Patrick@OneRadioNetwork.com. This is kind of curious. We know Bridgewater, right? How do you say the fellow's name? I always get it wrong and people correct me. Ray, is it?
Diallo.
Ray Diallo. This is the biggest, I guess what, Andrew, the biggest hedge fund in the world, right?
Yeah.
Biggest hedge fund in the world. Bridgewater Capital. He's up there near you in up in Connecticut.
Yeah, Bridgewater, New Jersey.
Right? Isn't he somewhere?
He's from New Jersey.
But I think he hangs out in Connecticut where all the rich
Greenwich,
people, you know, the old money, Greenwich, Connecticut, you know. Well, they were short, Ray was short European companies to the tune of about $22 billion early on, in a few months ago. Mm-hmm. You know, you heard that story, man. He was like big time short. He did pretty good. He's out of those guys. But now, check this out. Wow. $160 billion. I didn't even know these numbers are public, but I guess they are, right?
They are. They got a file.
They're $160 billion short U.S. equities at this moment in time. What does Ray know or believe?
Well,
that's a lot of bananas, you know, shorting stocks.
Sure.
Who?
Well, the fundamentals in the dollar are horrific.
Horrific.
And a lot of the growth in the stock market has been fueled by cheap money. So the ability to borrow money for next to nothing and buy stocks on leverage has been employed by investors for years now.
How long?
Oh, goodness, since rates hit sub 4%, I would say since 2012.
Mm-hmm.
So when they made all this cheap money available, and if you remember that end line in the movie, I don't know if it was, what was the one with, Well, doggone it was. They will loan the money, won't they?
Oh, at the, too big to fail.
Was it too big to fail?
Yeah.
Okay. So the fear was that the banks wouldn't loan the money into productive circulation, but would instead loan it to hedge funds who would borrow it and buy stocks.
Which is what they did.
And then you throw in the companies themselves buying their own stock. Because of the cheap money available. And that fueled a stock market rally that's pretty much unprecedented.
Yeah. So talk a little bit about new people. When you say cheap money available, this is would be the federal funds rate that gets all the play and all the
that's
all the
one
talk,
of them,
right?
Yeah.
That's right.
But the ability to borrow this money and then buy a stock that yields a couple or 3 or 5% in dividends and plus the growth. Well, this was viewed as a no-brain money opportunity. So you could make money without even thinking about it. They borrowed the money, bought the stock, and then enjoyed the benefits of the growth and of the dividends that it may or may not pay. So this has been a play for the hedge funds and for the investors for years. Now Ray Diallo believes the Fed is going to take away the punch bowl just when the party's getting fun. And evidenced by, of course, the tightness in the money markets throughout the rest of the world. You're already seeing some credit tightness. And if you recall, this is what started the problem in 2008, the inability where the credit markets froze up, and the inability of companies to do bond issues or auction rate securities or any of the many methods that people used to raise money were just not working. The channels were empty all of a sudden, and so they had to seek out other sources of capital. Many couldn't get any at all, and this started a wave of busts. And, of course, stock prices collapsed. And Mr. Diallo is kind of anticipating that, given that the 10-year bond is already over 3%. The Fed's already talking how they're going to have to raise interest rates, and the market's sort of pricing that in. So if they do, if that continues, this will cause the stock market to plunge. As well as the bond market. So I'm very surprised he didn't also go into the debt markets and short U.S. Bonds as well.
So there's no telling where this $25,000, I guess. What is it? 24,700 thing in the Dow. Where that's going to be 6 months from now? Right?
Correct.
Yeah, just have no
yeah.
idea. We have
yeah.
No
well,
idea.
If you look at where it's gone, nowhere but up. And so many investors that I talk to, if you look at the stock market and the bond market, that are at all time highs, effectively, bonds a little less so, but generally speaking, that's when you're getting in. When prices are at their peak, which is why I'm so bullish on, gold and numismatic coins. They are just well off of their peak. And in fact, many would argue making kind of recent bottoms. So that's the time you want to buy. You want to buy low. You want to sell high. You don't want to buy high and hope it goes higher. So I think, and Mr. Diallo is putting in the opposite bet. He's betting that it's going down. And I'm pretty sure he's right on the money.
Mm-hmm. Andrew Goss and Patrick Timpone in the Real World of Money. Let's go back to geopolitics and this whole Iran thing. There must be so much more to this than we know.
Always.
I've been reading some stories about some dark money that passed hands. I don't know if it's true. I mean, could be with John Kerry and why he's over there and all these European leaders that weren't happy with President Trump pulling out of the Iran deal. There's reports that there are a lot of money that passed hands to make this Iran deal even possible.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of folks, including past president, last name starts with O. There's reports about that. Once again, that could be all rumors and who knows, but certainly people are talking about it and writing about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I won't. Yeah, man.
Well, John Kerry.
There's something going on here.
Yeah. He's got a private equity firm.
Oh, does John?
That's John Kerry and Joe Biden's kids. They're together. So the same guy, Peter Schweitzer, who wrote Clinton Cash, is making some of these.
Is he out there talking about
yeah,
that?
Yeah. He's out there talking about this. Mm-hmm.
So it would be the idea. you give us money, and then we'll do this deal.
Right.
Right. Yeah. Then President Trump comes in and says, I don't think so.
Yes.
Let's not do this.
Kill that deal. That deal that you had put together.
And I wonder why all the globalists of the, well, I guess the globalists of the world, like the Merkels in France and all that, they're not happy. You know, they're the ones that are really screaming the loudest too. So they had something. What do you think they would have to gain from the Iran deal, like a Merkel or the guy from France?
Who are you talking about?
In other words, the head dude at France or Merkel of Germany, what would they have to gain with Iran signing this deal and being upset with President Trump for breaking it?
Well, they put themselves in place to benefit from this easing of Iranian sanctions.
How would they benefit?
Well, they put together an international hedge fund.
Oh, well, sure.
So you have Hunter Biden and Christopher Heinz, I believe, are the two guys.
You know all this stuff?
Heinz is, of course, stepson of... But, you know, the Heinz family was already filthy rich before they ever even heard of John Kerry. And so they've put together this international hedge fund.
Mm-hmm. You do know where the bodies are buried.
Well, a little bit. Mm-hmm. If I knew more about that, I think I'd know everything. But the reality is that the things that they do are kept from us on purpose.
Mm-hmm.
And this little bitty LLC that they put together back in 2009, according to latest SEC filing, is like $2.5 billion.
Mm-hmm.
So they of course are managed by this vice president's son and a member of the Heinz family, which is tied to John Kerry. And of course,
it's just like the movies, man.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
So this kind of stuff really goes on.
Needless to say, they have excellent lobbyists.
Yeah.
So you know you had Joe Biden and John Kerry negotiating the deals, and then, well, one can speculate, passing the information on to their family members. We don't know them all. Remember, they're a private equity fund, so they're not a hedge fund. Private equity funds don't have to file reports. But you can look around and find some things without having to really look too hard. They're doing business in China. You know, they're doing business. You remember Whitey Bulger?
No, I don't know.
Whitey Bulger, that famous mob hitman from Boston, the Bulger case, the Winter Hill gang.
No, not up on that one.
Oh, wow. Okay, so check it out. His family is involved in this transaction as well. So they have strange bedfellows, shall we say.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, their connections are impeccable. So their ability to have inside information others don't, made them a lot of money.
The only thing new in this world is the history you don't know, right?
Yeah,
that's it. Mark writes in, I hear a lot about investing in gold coins, but what about silver? I like collecting old silver dollars and things like that, but I'm not sure how good of an investment it would be as a hedge against inflation and economic collapse.
Yeah.
In the case of economic collapse, what do you think is a better investment, old silver coins or silver bullion?
Old silver coins. Because in the case of an economic collapse, like the first thing the government does is outlaw the private ownership of any hedge-related item. So gold and silver bullion, being high on that list, have already, in the last century, been made illegal to own. So President Johnson famously put restrictions on the ownership of silver. President Roosevelt made it illegal for Americans to own gold from 1933 until 1974. So the way that it worked is if you had an ounce of silver or an ounce of gold in those two periods, you were forced to sell them to the government. In the case of gold, forced to sell it to the government for $20 an ounce. And in the case of silver, you were forced to sell it to the government for $1.29. So even at its low point today, it's 1620 or so, it's still 15 times what it was when you were forced to sell it. So the reason I don't like silver bullion and gold bullion is for that reason, that it's not really your property. It's subject to government regulation. But if you buy old silver quarters, or silver dimes, or silver half dollars, silver dollars, again, not in screaming, uncirculated, high-end condition, but just used coins, you can buy them for a very small premium over their actual silver content. And to me, that represents a fantastic opportunity. So, short answer, yes, I love silver. Load up on it. Not only is it a monetary metal, it's an industrial metal as well.
Well, well said. Patrick Timpone, it is May 16, 2018, with Andrew Goss, currency historian. You can be on the show by emailing Patrick at oneradionetwork.com. Well, this Tesla had a bad week. Did you see? Okay, yeah. So they
started with the conference call.
Yeah, start with the conference call where Elon Musk obviously had way too much coffee or pine pollen or something.
Why are you asking me these stupid questions? Next, stupid question.
So then he starts tweeting. I think he's just, you know, he's got this thing. Then they have an exploding car, you know, and the thing just explodes.
The battery pack explodes.
And then they have production issues.
Well, they've had production issues, which was what caused Elon Musk to start sleeping in the plant. And, you know, that's what you need, a CEO that puts his bed in the plant and says, all right, I'm not leaving until our production issues are fixed. That, I believe they're going to fix them. And when they do, their ability to sustain themselves will be assured. The way that it looks right now, they're going to have to raise more capital. And that's what the rest of the marketplace is nervous about.
Yeah, his stock is going down, and he's going to run out of cash. And
that's what they think.
Yeah.
But if he gets his production numbers up, remember, their backlog of orders is mind-boggling. Imagine they have a company that can sell as many as it can produce. The backlog is not in orders, it's in production. If they had 1,000 cars a week, they could sell 1,000 cars a week. If they had 5,000 cars a week,
they could
sell 5,000 cars a week. So a production bottleneck is a lot easier to fix than a sales bottleneck. Like, we got all these cars and we can't sell them. That's different. Now we got all these orders and we can't fill them. Well, that's simply a mechanical issue. And I have great confidence in Elon Musk being able to fix his production issues. So if you look at the production on Teslas, it's steadily rising. And if he fixes his bottlenecks and makes it so they don't explode.
Yeah, that's not good.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, that's not good.
That's just definitely,
of course, the guy did crash, but the car's not supposed to explode just because you crash a car.
Yeah.
Not good. Sounds
like a Pinto.
Yeah. Did you see some of the other electric car companies? This is a real number. I can't believe it, but it's according to Bloomberg. The BMW announced that you can lease an electric BMW for $54 a month.
That's the other problem.
Yeah, that's. Can you imagine that?
Yeah.
That's a $50,000 automobile. $54 a month.
Yeah.
2011 Honda Clarity for $199 a month. Mm. Yeah, boy, you know, so, man, this market is really interesting, the electric car market, isn't it? Wow.
Yeah, well, you know what he blames the problems on, don't you?
Who, Elon?
Elon.
What?
Too many robots.
Too many robots.
We relied on these things to make this productivity.
Oh, I see, and they don't work.
So he got rid of them all. He hired people. Yeah, so, yeah.
But robots don't go to the bathroom or take coffee breaks and stuff like that.
Yeah, but if they're not working right, well, that's it. I mean, at least humans have a way to think around a problem. A robot's going to keep doing what it's supposed to do, whether it works or not.
Mm-hmm.
So he said just recently in an interview that he's getting rid of the robots and adding more humans.
Oh, is he really?
Yeah. Which makes sense to me.
Well, those things probably weren't cheap. You just don't. I guess you give them back and say they don't work.
Yeah, right.
Do you have a warranty on these guys, man?
Yeah, this robot, take it away. So he's literally sleeping in the factory, which makes yes.
I saw a video of some of the latest robots that they're building. Have you seen some stuff that these things can do?
Sure.
I mean, it's just like the movies. They have these robots that will run, you know, and they look like a man and they run, and you can try to knock them over and they, you know,
they keep their balance.
They keep their balance. I mean, this is what they're going to be running in the country someday, right? You don't want to have, you just have drones and robots.
Yes.
Wow, yeah. It's weird, man. Ooh, weird stuff, man.
Well, and
I guess
you know,
it's better than having people killed, though. So
yeah,
you're going to go to war, just do a robot.
Yeah. Yeah.
What were you going to say?
I was just going to say that, you know, given the circumstances at Tesla, I think rather than, I do believe that he is going to fix his production problems, but he's not going to be able to do anything about this competitiveness issue.
Yeah, what are they going to do?
Yeah, you know, what are the other manufacturers going to do? And, you know, looking at BMW, of
how course. Can BMW afford to do that for $54 a month? I don't understand that.
Well, because the...
How do you do that?
The credits are still there. The tax credits are still there.
Oh,
and
I see.
And the value of the car after the end of the lease period will still be quite significant.
Oh, yeah, with BMW, so you just sell the thing, right?
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's what they figure.
Mm-hmm. So. Wow.
We'll see if Elon hits his 2,500 figure.
Mm-hmm.
If he does, then he'll have the cash flow to fix his problems. Mm-hmm. If he doesn't, I don't want to be around because Tesla's got a long way to fall.
Well, if you think you're having a bad day with your currency, Argentine Central Bank, they spent $1 billion to support the peso, right? The Argentine Central Bank, and it still went down.
That's right.
So talk about this. Now, how does that work? So you have a central bank like Argentina. They can print. Do they print pesos to drive the peso? How does
that work? Instead of printing pesos, they take their dollars and buy pesos.
Oh, they take their dollars and buy pesos, of course. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's supposed to drive the peso up.
Up.
But it didn't do that.
But even in the face of that, the peso went down. 25 per dollar now. Wow. Yeah.
25
pesos for a dollar.
Like, what is it traditionally? What it was?
Five.
Really?
Four, yeah.
Wow, man.
Yep. And now it's at a record low. So... the IMF is saying essentially, we're not getting involved here. So I mean, we'll have to see what happens. They're going to have a board meeting, the IMF, on Friday. So could be anything.
So the IMF, you've taught us that they're really the dollar boys incarnate, right?
Yep, that's right.
So they don't really have any motivation to bail Argentina out or anything like that.
And that's right.
They just want their gold.
And so they want, that's it. They and want and their productive capacity.
Mm, like they did in Venezuela, right?
Yeah. Yep.
Man, you talk about raping and pillaging. They, you really got a deal going when you get this dollar thing, don't you? The dollar being the king. Man.
Yeah,
you got
right.
a lot going on.
Yeah, and all the other currencies of the world are pegged to it. So, you know, when they announce that they're going to sell $30 billion worth of notes, people looked at it and said, well, how many more of these are you going to print?
How many?
Yeah. I'd rather run to safety. So that has been adding to the flight to quality issue that has made the dollar as temporarily strong as it is. Again, the cleanest, dirty shirt in the laundry.
Well, you could loan Argentina money today. You know, guess what you're going to get? Interest rate.
Crazy money.
20%.
20%.
20%.
In pesos.
And
hopefully that'll offset the 25% loss that you'll take in that same period. So it's not a good situation.
888-663-6386 email patrick@oneradionetwork.com. Well, you just got to love...
Oh, excuse me. Wait a minute. On Argentina, they're still heading into stagflation now, where the currency continues to fall and economic growth slows down. So last year, goodness, I don't even know how much they went. So far this year, the Argentine peso is down 25%. So far this year, we're not even 6 months in. So who knows?
They're just having a hard time, Andrew. They just need some help. They need a little love.
The IMF is meeting Friday. If they put together a standby
show
facility.
Show us some love here. Show us
some
love.
They might just decide, okay, let's bail you guys out.
Have you heard of the Voltgeld Initiative?
No, I have not.
You're going to love
this
one.
But it's got to be gold involved.
Okay. How'd you know?
because of the geld part.
Oh, that's the geld part. Okay. So here's a referendum in meaning sovereign money.
Mm-hmm.
So I think this is Switzerland. Okay, Switzerland. So it's money produced by the central bank, by the sovereign, the government represented by its central bank, money created in accordance with it, the needs in the economy, and mm-hmm. not to the private bankers. But so I'm confused. So what they're saying is, and this initiative is going on June 10th, whether they want to stop the unlimited, unrestrained money making by the Swiss private banking system,
correct,
and return to the olden days when the money was made and controlled only by the central bank.
Mm-hmm.
But isn't it the same thing?
Sort of.
I'm confused here.
Now, sort of.
Yeah. So what's this about?
Well, essentially, they want the people to decide whether or not this should be allowed. So we've talked about before how banks create money. How do banks
mortgages
create
money? Mortgages and credit cards, everything, right?
So they want to take that power away from the banks and leave it to the central bank and the central bank alone.
Oh.
Yeah.
That would be a big deal. That would be like the Monetary Decontrol Act kind of thing?
Yes.
Backwards?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But remember, this is like a, this is not a, this is a private initiative, essentially, by people like myself in Switzerland, who long for the days when, you know, the Swiss franc,
Well, it was a gold deal, right?
Yeah,
it was
a gold deal.
They're not talking about that. They're just simply talking about the idea of allowing the central bank to monetize debt rather than the private banks
themselves. Yeah.
But isn't the central bank still private banking just like it is here?
Well, if you want to,
if
you want a good look at that, we talked about it for like a split second.
Yeah.
The Ross Perot initiative, right? It is, give me your deal. So, in other words, the deal that the banks have under the current circumstance is the Congress spends money that it doesn't have. The central bank and the private banks create the money and loan it into circulation.
Right.
What a reversal of that would be, the Treasury creates the money and loans it to the banks. So a sovereign money initiative would just mean that the only people that can create the money are the central bank. The banks themselves have to work with money that they either borrow or take in on deposit.
Well, that would change things a lot.
Sure.
Huge. Yeah. Probably won't pass this.
No. I don't think so. I mean, remember, the last referendum to return to the gold standard didn't even get any traction. So
in Switzerland.
Yeah, in Switzerland.
Which is like the gold place of the world, right? I mean, these guys got gold in their veins, right?
Mm-hmm.
In their DNA, yeah.
Right.
Switzerland, yeah.
So the only way that banks get the money to make loans or to buy things is to borrow it from the Swiss National Bank. So that's their concept. Instead of allowing banks themselves to create money, only the Central Bank of Switzerland will be able to create money. And then if the banks need that money, they have to borrow it, they have to pay. And, hey, that's one way to get the money back to the people. But I don't think, I believe even if the situation comes to pass that they'll be subverted by the ownership of the central bank.
It's interesting to me that the people in Switzerland would even understand the idea that if you take out a mortgage, the bank like Wells Fargo creates the money.
Right.
I wouldn't think they would know that, would they?
Well, modern money mechanics, I point them to every time, printed or written by the, published
but
the Chicago Fed.
But most people around the world wouldn't know that, would they?
No, they don't.
No. That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah.
They wouldn't know.
Because we're all thinking that money is real. In fact, you ask most Americans, those that really aren't connected with money, what backs the U.S. dollar, they'll tell you it's gold. I mean, gold backs the money. Everybody knows that. So this basic fundamental change in our monetary system was virtually ignored by the population, so much so that today people store their entire wealth, their entire life savings in this non-money money. So It's what we've grown to accept. People view the money in their bank account as real money, but it's not. It's counterfeit. It's plain and simple.
Not money, money.
Yeah, and you know, it's
not money, money.
Yeah, if you look at, we're talking about Argentine currency, right?
Yeah.
So let's say you had you're in Argentina, and you have a real Argentine 100 peso note, and a fake U.S. $100 bill.
Yeah.
It's my bet that the fake $100 bill will be taken and circulate much more readily than a real 100 peso Argentine note, because, you know, a fake note on a real currency is better than a real note on a fake currency. So given the choice, I believe people would take the counterfeit American money before they took the, even if they just suspected it was counterfeit, right? Rather than the money that is going to lose value guaranteed.
Patrick Timpone and Andrew Goss, it is the real world of money. Stay right there. Good morning. Stephen Buhner, master herbalist, wrote an entire book on pine pollen. Previously, we asked him, what's the difference between gathering some pine pollen, eating that, and then maybe taking Sir Thrival pine pollen and the grape alcohol, the tincture? What's the difference in the body?
Okay, the difference is pine pollen is probably one of the best nutrient food substances on the earth. And you see, it's made to be uptaken by all of the life around it. All of the other plants take it in and use it for growth. Many of the animals eat it, and it's a very nutrient substance. If you eat it, what happens is it goes through your GI tract and then puts it into the bloodstream, and there's a lot of great stuff in it. I mean, it's really high in amino acids and protein and vitamins, so it's a very magnificent substance. It's kind of a nutrient longevity tonic food, and it will over time raise levels, but if you really want to raise them fast, you don't want to let it go through your GI tract, hence the use of a tincture.
And you can click and order this great product right on our website. Any of these are Thrival links. Take you right to the pine pollen and order away. OneRadioNetwork.com. Previously, with research scientists at MIT, Stephanie Seneff, PhD, and the curious connections between these glyphosates, Roundup, GMOs, and sulfur.
So if you simply put the glyphosate in place of the glycine in the sulfur transferase, you will not be able to get the sulfate from the cholesterol sulfate to some other molecule, such as the heparin sulfate. The cell won't be able to defend itself with sulfate if it can't put the sulfate there. But it's really, really important to be able to do that because, for example, cholesterol sulfate, it delivers sulfate to the cells. But in order to deliver it, you've got to take the sulfate off of the cholesterol and put it on something else. And that's where the sulfur transferase would come in and wouldn't be able to do that.
I know, gets a little geeky, but the point is that without the proper amount of sulfur in the body, and now it's being disrupted because of the GMOs, even more than what it was already doing, it's not good. So we think that this sulfur product that we've been promoting is really helping people to keep everything kind of working well, because this whole sulfur cycle is kind of God's way of keeping the bad guys out and exiting the body. And because our sulfur is absolutely pure with no additives, it's different from almost all the other ones out there. You can click an order, three prices, right on our website, OneRadioNetwork.com. Yeah, the gentleman yesterday, Wayne Blakely, was talking about it. And, well, I'll tell you what, the glyphosate thing and the sulfur cycle, it's even, we just keep hearing it more and more and more and more like that. And, you know, I don't want to do fear porn on you, but there's just kind of no way you can really get out of the glyphosates now. They're using them on you know, on just non-GMO foods, just to dry out the crop and before they do it. And he was saying how he thought how the glyphosate thing was the whole bottom line for the gluten intolerance thing that's been going on for the last, you know, 10 years. We don't know for sure. So we think sulfur is a nice hedge in your bet to help you detox this stuff and keep things moving. And he was very, very big on sulfur yesterday, Wayne Blakely. So we think it's a great product. You might please check it out if you'd like to. Just to go to OneRadioNetwork.com. You have three prices, United States, Canada, worldwide. And also, if you'd like more than 4 pounds, just email me, Patrick@OneRadioNetwork.com.
We talk about your health, wealth, and well-being on OneRadioNetwork.com. Once again, here's Patrick.
All righty, here we are. With the real world of money, 888-663-6386, email Patrick at OneRadioNetwork.com. So this is always good to know. I don't know if you know, but the UN is behind a thing called Codex Alimentarius kind of thing. Andrew, you've heard of that?
Yes, we've discussed that.
And Codex Alimentarius, if you'd like to define it in simple terms.
It's a world monetary system.
Yeah.
For pharmaceuticals.
and things like. So it's kind of like, the simplest way to put it is, we don't think you should really have 1,000 milligrams of vitamin C because it could be too much. So you're only allowed to sell 100 milligrams. That kind of stuff's going on in Europe today. If you can believe it.
Sure.
If you can believe that. So now they are thinking that there's really just too many guns out there. And
that's right.
Yeah. United States, they are presuming that they do have authority over pretty much everybody on planet Earth.
On everything.
Earth. Yeah. And they're doing all kinds of things about tracing guns, about limiting guns, about doing provisions and,
tattooing
greater
bullets.
Control over ammunition, the component that makes guns lethal, make concrete commitments to increasing women's participation in small arms control. What? What does that mean?
Well, we
get
need
the moms involved.
Yeah, get the moms, exactly.
Oh, my goodness.
Get the moms involved.
Uh-huh.
And I've had arguments with family members.
Wow.
That I've accused them of being fair weather patriots. You know, when the Constitution supports their position on this thing or that thing, boy, they're all about the Constitution. But when it doesn't support what they like or don't like, man, they're, you know, we have to change it. It needs change. So I say to those anti-Second Amendment people, the anti-gun people, get your butt out there, get your signatures, and repeal the Second Amendment. Otherwise, stop trying to infringe on my right to bear arms. Stop trying.
So, I mean, is it so spooky to even think about the UN as such a maniacal kind of, you know, giant squid?
No, that's what they were put in place for. Like that, yeah? That's why they were put in place.
That goes back to the money boys.
Yeah. Huh? That goes back to the League of Nations with the boys that started the Federal Reserve.
Oh, the same folks.
Woodrow Wilson, yeah.
They've always got great ideas.
Yeah, no, they knew.
That's you
we've brought the central bank to America, and it's owned privately, and now we need an international body that can make rules and regulations to merge us all into one big happy family of nations. Ruled by a central authority headquartered in New York, the UN.
Yeah, and who donated the money for the...
The Rockefeller family.
Oh, they did.
Yeah.
See, I knew
they actually donated the land.
That was a leading question. I knew that.
Yeah.
I was leading the witness there.
Yes, you were.
Who donated that thing? Yeah. I knew it was some really rich people. I wasn't sure. Man, are they? You seen some of the prices they're getting for... For paintings these days?
Yeah, I'm telling you.
Amazing.
Art, antiques, collectibles, tangibles.
Yeah, you said for years, art, antiques, collectibles.
Yeah.
It's funny. Yeah.
So, yeah, you know, the paintings don't reveal themselves but once a year, unlike the gold and silver coins, which we constantly have the ability to mark to market. The paintings, once a year, they go on auction, and that's what sets the price. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, some of these numbers just boggle the mind.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.